What's up, bosses? Before we kick off this episode, I want to tell you about our sponsor this week, Indeed.com. Indeed is the hiring platform where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. Don't spend hours on multiple job sites looking for candidates with the right skills when you can do it all with Indeed. Indeed knows when you're growing your own business, you have to make every dollar count. That's why with Indeed, you only pay for quality applications that match your must-have job requirements. And Indeed has all kinds of amazing tools that I'm going to tell you about later in the break. But if you want to get a jump start now on your hiring, just visit Indeed.com/iLab. That's Indeed.com/iLab. Indeed.com/ILAB. Terms and conditions apply. Cost per application pricing not available for everyone. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, let's kick off this episode of Invest Like a Boss.
Welcome to the Invest Like a Boss podcast.
I'm Sam Marks.
I'm Derek Spartz.
And I'm Johnny FD. We're self-made entrepreneurs who invest our own money and use modern technology to invest like a boss.
Join us each week for exclusive interviews with our network of modern investors, business owners, and multimillionaires to discover new ways to invest our hard-earned cash.
What is up, bosses? Episode 264. It's the Invest Like a Boss podcast. I'm Derek Spartz here in Los Angeles. Johnny, I believe, is still over in Kiev with plans to travel. Johnny, how are you?
Pretty good. But it's been a weird week. We finally have electricity for the last 3 days. And then Russia was like, no, we can't let them stabilize. So they sent a bunch of missiles last night. Luckily, it survived. But we'll see what happens.
Sadly, I see the little, you know, on your iPhone, you get a few little top news updates. And they change every so often. So this morning, I was kind of half asleep, just checking my phone quick. And I saw something about Russian missiles in Kiev. And I was like, is that new or was that from a couple of days ago? Sadly, I don't know anymore because it seems to be recurring headline.
Yeah. And actually, they kind of stopped reporting about it. I'll kind of get into that a little bit later. But I mean, the title of this episode is My Worst Investment Ever. I think this was suggested by one of the Patreons saying, you guys have talked about, you know, all the good investments. Let's talk about some of the bad ones. And my worst real estate investment, which I warned myself on. I mean, if you guys listen back a few years ago, I said, like, it just doesn't make sense to buy physical real estate. There's too many liabilities that hold you down. The math actually doesn't even end up checking out over the long run unless you get lucky. And I knew that buying physical real estate was not the right thing to do, yet I did it anyways. I didn't follow my own advice, Derek.
So I'm sorry. I'm just laughing inside because the podcast itself, Invest Like a Boss, I think we like to be transparent with everybody and, you know, we admit our mistakes. And I remember posting something. I want to say it was in Patreon or maybe in the Boss Lounge where I said, I'm happy that we get to talk about our mistakes as much as our wins, unlike other investment podcasts that only tell you that everything they invest in turns to gold. And I just remember someone commenting, maybe you guys are just bad investors.
No, I think that the good investors are the ones that are still lucky or the ones that just don't talk about their losses. I mean, I think that's literally it. I think that the only way to be a solid investor, unless you actually just follow the, you know, super basics, like, you know, dollar cost, you know, index into index, low cost index funds, and just never, ever get tempted in chasing FOMO or getting talked into buying crypto or, you know, jumping into the real estate market or, you know, whatever is kind of the hot topic that everybody's talking about. And you feel like, you know what? Maybe the, you know, world is changing. Maybe Meta really is the future. Maybe, you know, this and that is the future. I don't want to miss out.
But I think you were really smart in the sense of buying real estate because we're always told, you know, that's the best investment you'll ever make. Although it's an argument whether your primary home is actually an investment or a liability because, you know, certain factors depend on, like, let's take my situation here in Los Angeles where, you know, the average single family home is well over $1 million. Now, is the average person going to put themselves over $1 million in debt when they could just rent? There could be arguments where you could call that a liability, but I think you were smart in relocating to a place that was essentially a lot cheaper than, I mean, basically any spot, even in the US, even in a small city. I think Kiev, a major city with access to a lot of a lot of things at the time, obviously before the war broke out, that gave you a lot of comforts of the U.S., although it was in another country, at a fraction of the price.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, moving abroad and living in these different places was the best decision I ever made. You know, that's the best investment I ever made, is lowering my monthly expenses, being able to save more money, you know, and, you know, being location dependent. But I could have done that while renting. The main reason why I didn't want to rent in Ukraine is the kind of midterm rentals, like the monthly rentals, are so overpriced. Like, there just wasn't a market for it, where you would either rent, you know, basically a hotel room or an Airbnb on like an expensive nightly rate if you wanted something decent, or you'd get like a total piece of crap that you'd just be really uncomfortable in. So I saw that there was an opportunity to buy a nice Airbnb and charge at kind of mid-market rent, where it was about, I think it was about $800 a month, which, you know, for a monthly Airbnb, you know, including all your fees, you know, to someone in the U.S., they're like, okay, that's super cheap, because what would an Airbnb per month cost in the U.S.?
I was looking at maybe just spending like a month in the summer in another city, and you're talking a few thousand dollars at least. I would say even just for a two-bedroom basic place, minimum $3,000 a month.
Yeah, and you know, this place was pretty small, it's one bedroom, but it would still, you know, to an American or someone coming to live, and they're like, okay, it's right in the city center, it's a good location, I'm happy to pay $800 a month. You know, it's like not even a big deal.
Yeah, I would 2 to 3x that at least here.
Yeah. But the problem is, before my unit, you can either rent a, you know, old, dirty babushka flat, kind of like the one I rented for us when you came to Kyiv, or you would have to spend, you know, $2,000 or $3,000 for a, you know, a nice place, you know, kind of like when Sam decided to go down the street to the
Intercontinental.
Yeah, and spend $300 a night, $400 a night. And that was the problem with Ukraine. There was nothing in between. So I saw this opportunity and I said, you know what? I'm going to buy this place. And I did the calculations in my head and I said, I think I can get a 20% return on this per year. And I was getting it. I bought the place for $37,500, so about $40,000 all in. And I was renting it from day one for anywhere between like 30, you know, I was at on average $34 a night. So per month, I was pulling in like $800 a month before all the fees and everything, which is a 20% return. It's insane.
Yeah. So let's be clear, though, that this place is not in Kyiv. It's in the city of Kharkiv. Why don't you tell people about Kharkiv and its advantages to maybe an Airbnb crowd or any essential American or otherwise tourist to the city? Why would you go to Kharkiv?
Yeah, and actually, this would be kind of a good kind of info point for people looking in other countries, you know, that aren't at war. Kharkiv is a second-tier city. So, you know, think about, you know, the Chiang Mai of Thailand instead of the Bangkok, or think of whatever the second biggest city is in whatever country, you know, you're thinking of, whatever state you're thinking of, you know. So instead of like Miami, you're looking at Tampa or something. I don't know.
Sure.
But yeah, in general, it's like the second tier city. And but it's still pretty big. It was still 1.5 or 2 million people, big student population as well. So people liked it because there was a lot of good restaurants and people needed to go there, you know, either to visit or for university, whatever it is. So there's always tourist people, you know, coming and business people coming. For whatever reason, it was just, you know, a lot cheaper than Kyiv, because Kyiv is the capital. And Kharkiv, you know, I mean, I guess in retrospect, it's so close to Russia that some people were afraid to invest there. But also, it used to be kind of a crappy industrial city when the Soviets had it. But in the last 5 or 10 years, it really got green. It got really nice. They redid all the parks and it became a really beautiful city.
And I think that's a key point too, is to find those cities that are kind of on the come up, to put it in an American perspective. Like, think of Detroit in 2008 compared to how it looks now, or like a Cleveland or any of those cities kind of in the Rust Belts that have really invested in their town and made them look a lot better. I think that's kind of similar to what a Kharkiv was, you know, let's say 2 years ago. Obviously not today.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, so a good example was my friend, he bought 2 condos in Naptown. You know what that is?
I don't.
Indianapolis. Indiana.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's from there.
I've watched a couple HGTV shows there. Looks like the real estate was very cheap, and it's gotten very expensive quick.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, the biggest problem with HGTV is it takes them a few years to even air the episode. It might be like 3-4 years ago. And you look at the prices, you're like, come on.
I know. Yeah. Like a House Hunters, you're like, where'd they find that house? Because that does not exist in my name. They'll come to Los Angeles a lot. I'm like, no way that still exists.
They're like, yeah, my wife's a librarian. I'm a part-time employee at Chipotle.
Our budget's 1.2.
But yeah, so Kharkiv is like one of those cities where it was just kind of a diamond in the rough. And here's the thing is it's always going to be a gamble when it's not an established, you know, city yet. So, for example, Indianapolis or Detroit could have went the other way. It could have just kept dropping in value. It could have, you know, become crappy. But in general, if you have lived there or you know people, you know, who are from these places and you can see that they're investing and it's getting nice, that's when you jump in, not when you pay full price when it's already at the peak. You know, like when people complain that you can't buy a house in San Francisco or LA, you know, working a normal job anymore with a normal salary. One thing that they don't consider is now those cities are established, but 50 years ago, it wasn't as like high tech of a city yet. They weren't established cities yet. So if you want a comparison, you'd have to look in a kind of a second or third tier city today.
Yeah, I agree with that. The city landscape changes dramatically, especially with technology. I mean, Silicon Valley is a great example of that.
So I remember actually hearing these numbers. I was like, I don't know, I was watching a show or listening to some podcast or something where people said that to make like a really quick calculation in their head, they thought when they're looking at like buying a rental property, they will do something called the 1% rule. Have you ever heard of that?
The 1% rule. The only thing I know 1% is they're evil.
No. So basically, whatever the price of the apartment or the house is, just multiply by 1% and ask yourself, can I get this per month as a rental?
So I just looked it up quick, just a super Google search. I should be using ChatGPT now. The 1% rule of real estate investing measures the price of the investment property against the gross income it will generate. For a potential investment to pass the 1% rule, its monthly rent must be equal or no less than 1% of the total purchase price.
Exactly. And it's not exact math, but it's a very easy, quick way to see if something's in the ballpark. Because if it's in the 1% rule, so for example,
let's take the unit you bought, Johnny. Let's take your example. Okay. How much did you pay?
So it was $37,500, right? So let's say 40 grand out the door. 1% of that is very easy. It's $400. I asked myself, can I get $400 a month for this? And the answer was yes. I knew that on Airbnb, I can rent for more. And if I did long term, I can get about $400. And therefore, it passes that rule, which means that within 10 years, I can get 100% of my money back. I was able to actually get better than that while, you know, putting it on daily rent on Airbnb because you normally just get more. But this is kind of the magic number. So when you're looking at property in LA or wherever you want to rent, you want to buy, you know, like how much is some of the places that you've been looking at recently?
So I've been looking at around the $700,000 to $800,000 range.
Okay, so if you look at those properties for $700,000, what would 1% of that be?
I guess $7,000.
Yeah.
Now that you put it that way, Jesus.
Yeah. So in general,
oh, I'm screwed, Johnny.
Yeah. Like, it just wouldn't make sense as a rental property because it would take you way, you know, not just, you know, like for zero chance you would get your money back in 10 years.
Right.
If anything, it would be double that. So yeah, maybe you can get it back in 20 years. And that's why I never wanted to buy real estate in California. It just didn't make any financial sense.
Now I'm more downtrodden than ever. Thanks, Johnny.
Yeah. Real estate is overpriced. I mean, there's no other ways to kind of calculate it. Because I mean, if you think about it, would you spend $7,000 a month to live there?
No, I wouldn't. It's an immediate no. It's not even like maybe. No, it's no. Yeah. I wouldn't.
Exactly. So that's why I chose Kharkiv. But I mean, obviously, there's the risks of moving into especially buying something, not only in a country that's less, you know, stable, economically and also with its borders, but who knows, right? Like the other place I actually looked into buying before this, do you remember what country it was?
Looking to buy before this. I mean, you were, Sri Lanka maybe? Or no, that's where you were before this. Were you looking to buy there?
Yeah. So there's three places that I was looking to buy. Sri Lanka, which
if you missed the news.
they had a huge protest and overthrew their government about 6 months past. And they had a huge oil and gas crisis as well, where people were lining up for literally 3 or 4 days to fill up a tank of gas in their car. Now, luckily, that has passed. But I'm sure their real estate market and the tourism market has not rebounded from that. Because whenever you have such a big crisis, especially a government overthrow, it makes people wary of traveling there for a long time. So whatever I would have bought there would have been screwed.
You're just blazing a path through the world, Johnny.
Well, so the other place that I looked, actually, I have videos on my YouTube channel of me touring places to buy. Can you try to remember where it was? I'll give you a hint. It was near an ocean or near a sea. Near an
ocean. I don't know where else you looked because, yeah, you were in Sri Lanka for a long time. You went to Kiev. Turkey, maybe?
Yep, it was Turkey.
Oh yeah. My gosh. And they just obviously had the huge disaster earthquake there.
Yeah. So, really like my condolences to everyone in Turkey, especially those who were affected. But I mean, all of Turkey is going to be affected from this because it's not, if my particular, apartment that got destroyed, happened to be in that area, then I would have lost everything because there's no earthquake insurance there. And if they did, it would have been bankrupt, right? Because they wouldn't be able to pay it all off. But even if you are in a different area, I mean, real estate is going to tank there. I mean, their economy is doing terribly. They've had crazy inflation before this disaster, and now they're screwed. So yeah. It's like we would like to think that when you invest, I don't know how to phrase this, but some people think that they're geniuses because their investment just happened to do well. But a lot of it they happen to get lucky. And secondly, they weren't taking big risks. So they were probably making mediocre to even bad investments. I mean, if you buy a piece of property in, let's say, LA, which is already established market, it's probably not going to go down that much. You're probably not going to lose it to, to war or to something. But at the same time, you're probably not going to make that big of a home run because that home run has already been hit.
And also, I think a lot of people don't think of is a lot of the regulations. California is heavily regulated and a tax heavy state. So the government's going to get their share before you get yours. And I think I'm actually curious, Johnny, on what kind of fees Airbnb took out of your property in Kharkiv. And if you had to pay any local rental, short term licenses, taxes, fees, anything like that to anyone in Ukraine.
Airbnb has changed their fee structure a lot in the last couple of years. And depending on if they're more interested in getting more guests on the platform or getting more hosts on the platform. Mm-hmm. So before, the host paid most of the fees and the guests, maybe paid like a very small amount. But I don't know if you noticed in the last few years, it's kind of swapped where if a rental, says it's $50 a night or something, it ends up being double that by the time you actually book it.
Oh, I have noticed. That's why I've switched to mostly hotels where it used to be the opposite a few years ago. I would say I definitely stayed in more Airbnbs than hotels, but now I'd say it's flipped back over to hotels for me.
Yeah. And it's because they flipped it. They realized that they could I don't know what happened, but basically they realized that their actual customers are not the customers, but the hosts. And the more bookings they get on Airbnb, the more money they make. So they made it so now the host only pays 3% or something, a very small amount, while the guest pays 14 to 20%.
Interesting. Yeah, it must be working out because I just saw that Airbnb reported yesterday that 2022 was their first full profitable year ever. So it's working out for them.
Yeah. So yeah, it was pretty minimal fees on the Airbnb side, but I gave 20% to my Airbnb manager just to kind of check people in and out, to have someone clean the place, to, you know, make sure it's okay. The reason why it has to be so much is because I was doing daily rent where they would have to be there very often. Unfortunately, I didn't have a clause in there saying that if someone ends up staying a month or longer, you know, we should lower that rate because
they're doing less work. So yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Because if you hire someone to take care of a long-term tenant, like you would never pay more than 10% because it doesn't make any sense to give them, you know, a ton of money where they don't have to, you know, even pick up the phone for 30 days in a row.
Yeah, I guess I didn't think about that. And thinking back, I think I remember you saying that you had a couple of people, you know, go there for a few days and say, hey, can I stay here a month or 2 months or whatever it may be?
Yeah. So I ended up having a guy there for 4 months and he was, you know.
Wow.
Yeah.
Easy rent.
It was great. It was fantastic. And then unfortunately, because of the war, he left. He went to Europe somewhere, left his stuff in the apartment. So I couldn't even re-rent it out. But he had paid basically until the end of February.
That's a dream tenant, Johnny.
I know.
No, empty apartment, and he pays the rent.
Yeah. The problem, though, is when the war started, he messaged me saying, hey, what should I do with my stuff? And I was like, I don't, man. Like,
it's war, man. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. I don't even know if your stuff is still there.
Yeah.
So he didn't go back, and I didn't go back until last week. I was in Kharkiv to check on the apartment.
All right. Hold that thought, Johnny. Before you tell us what happened in Kharkiv, let's take a super quick break. We'll hear from our sponsor, and then we'll find out what Johnny discovered when he went back to Kharkiv almost a year after the war started. This week's sponsor of Invest Like a Boss is our favorite hiring partner, Indeed. They understand that every hire counts when it comes to running your business. You can find top talent fast with Indeed's suite of powerful hiring tools like Indeed Instant Match, assessments, and virtual interviews. In fact, I think Instant Match is my favorite feature because, like you, I'm sure as well, I hate waiting. And when you use Instant Match, as soon as you sponsor a post, you'll get a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description, and you can invite them to apply right away. In fact, Indeed's US data shows over 80% of Indeed employers find quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match their job description the moment they sponsor a job. So join the over 3 million businesses worldwide using Indeed to hire great talent fast, because they know when you are growing your own business, you have to make every dollar count. That's why with Indeed, you only pay for quality applications that match your must-have job requirements. You can visit Indeed.com/iLab to start hiring now. That's Indeed.com/iLab. Indeed.com/ILAB. Terms and conditions apply. Cost per application pricing not available for everyone. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Johnny, it's been, I think, 1 year almost exactly when this episode airs since the war broke out between Russia and Ukraine. You just went back to your second property in Kharkiv. It was essentially your Airbnb rental before things went down, and you hadn't seen it since the war. First of all, tell us how you got to Kharkiv and then what you found.
So I took a train to Poltava, which was a kind of a city halfway, to meet a friend just kind of for the weekend, just to kind of chill out and get out of the city. And then I was like, you know what? I'm so close to Kharkiv. Let me just go.
So you didn't you didn't even plan to go there, essentially.
I had it in my mind. I brought the key with me just in case.
Okay.
But I was like, you know what? Let me decide after the weekend.
Brave, assuming you even needed a key to get in.
I know. Well, the other thing was I wasn't even sure if that was the right key or not because it had been a year.
Right.
So
yeah.
I was thinking, you know, I am screwed. I don't know what's going to happen. But I ended up taking a shared van. We call them like marshrutkas, just because those run every hour versus the train. Like I would have had to wait until, you know, evening or something, and I would have got there super late at night, which I didn't want to do. Mm-hmm. So I got there in the afternoon, 2 p.m., and I said, okay, I got to go see if this place is even standing, because right like on that same street, like on the same block, my two favorite coffee shops were all boarded up, and there was, the windows were smashed. And they were, like, above it, there was like some burnt out marks from some shrapnel or like a missile.
Mm-hmm.
Two more blocks down the street in the opposite direction, there was an entire building that was destroyed.
So is there military presence in the streets, or are they just kind of letting you do your own thing? How does that work, just getting around?
So there was a checkpoint coming into the city where it's pretty normal. I would say every city in Ukraine, there's a checkpoint where they check everybody's ID. They make sure you're not like a spy or, infidel or something. And this one was really strange because they had a tank on the street facing us as we were driving towards them.
Oh, God. Yeah, just in case you decide to charge them or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was like, I've been to a lot of checkpoints in Ukraine. I've never seen an active tank, you know, and an actual, not like a statue, but like an actual tank in the middle of the street with the cannons pointed at cars driving towards you. So like, if you decide for some reason that you don't want to slow down, like this tank would just smash you.
Could be we just sent a few over from the U.S. Could have been one of ours.
No, this is definitely one of the older ones. But they, it was a crazy thing. And actually, I had to get out of this shared van because I was the one sitting by the door.
I feel like they got to search the van too, don't they?
Yeah. Well, the guy comes in, one of the police officers with an AK, you know, and I'm standing outside and I'm looking at this tank. And then there was a female soldier, absolutely gorgeous, by the way. And she had, you know,
Johnny got her number while they were searching the van.
Well, I almost got something else from her because I was petting this stray dog, like this dog, which I thought was her. I thought it was like, you know, it was like a puppy guard dog or something.
Mm-hmm.
And she says to me in Russian, yeah, well, you know, do you want to use a suboko? And I was like, what? Like, I didn't understand what she said.
Mm-hmm.
She was like, you know, do you just Subaka Suboy Doma or something? Like, would you like to bring this dog with you? He's a stray.
Oh, God.
And it was a really nice puppy. But I was like, I don't even know if I have a home. You know, I might be staying in a hostel tonight.
Right.
And the dog looked happy at the checkpoint and it was keeping her company. I was like, no, just like keep the dog here. So, yeah, we get through the checkpoint, you know, no problems. We get to, you know, I take the metro to my apartment. First thing I noticed was they weren't charging fare for the metro. It's open. It's just free for everybody now.
That makes sense. I mean, how much money are you really going to make off it anyways?
Yeah. So I think part of it is just like the economy is bad, but also second people using this bomb shelter are coming in and out. So they're just like, you know what, let's just keep it free for everyone. I take the train to my apartment. I'm walking and I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, the windows have to be smashed because there were so many broken windows just on the 5-minute walk from the station to my
so
apartment.
So what kind of building is this? Is this like how many stories? Like, is it brick? Is it just kind of explain what the building actually looks like?
So the buildings in that neighborhood are pretty big brick buildings. I would say maybe 5 stories high, but, you know, all kind of old Soviet brick. And then my unit was actually pretty newly built, probably like within the last 10 years or something. And actually, I think originally it was supposed to be an office, but then they converted it. They decided for some reason to make it into apartments. So it's a 2-story apartment building. It's really small.
Oh, so you're a smaller one. Okay.
Yeah. Which was almost kind of good because we're kind of sheltered and hiding from, you know, everyone else.
A smaller target on a bullseye. Yeah.
Yeah. And we're in the back of the parking lot. So I'm not on the main street. So gotcha. It was kind of like in a good location, right? We have a front door that I never got the key to because it was never locked. Like there was no need to lock the front entrance to the main apartment. And I had sent some friends there a few months ago to check out my apartment and they said they couldn't get in. Luckily, I got added somehow to the apartment group chat and they let me in. I get to my apartment and the first thing I see is just plaster all over my floor in my kitchen.
So something broke in or someone broke in. Did you find the source of it?
I look up and I realize that I have a new skylight that I didn't order.
Oh, fancy.
Yeah.
In the ceiling?
Actually, yeah.
This is your kitchen.
In my kitchen. The first day I got there, it was already like 5 p.m. So it was a bit dark outside. I thought if somehow it only made like a small hole and it didn't go all the way to the sky. But the next morning when I woke up, I was like, okay, that's definitely a blue sky and clouds.
It's like a movie where there's like the sun ray shining in, like Indiana Jones.
Oh, God, yeah. So this hole was probably the size of like a cantaloupe or something. So not as big as like a watermelon, but like maybe like, you know, like, yeah, like smaller than a bowling ball, but, you know, bigger than like a, I would say like a cantaloupe.
That's enough to cause concern. Was there water damage around? I mean, I got to think, you know, water is for sure going to get in there. The snow or whatever it is.
Yeah, luckily it wasn't as bad as it could have been. But definitely there was a little bit of damage on the floors. The paints on my countertops were all damaged. There was like rust stains from like metal things just bleeding everywhere. I don't know when it happened. I would imagine it probably only happened like a month ago. And that's actually honestly the reason why I haven't checked until now, is because I thought, you know, what's the point? Like, if I go there and everything's okay, you know, I can't rent it out anyways.
Yeah, and you can't run to the Home Depot and get supplies to patch it up.
Yeah, so I was thinking like, okay, like, you know, if everything's okay, like, then maybe it's not okay in a month. Or if it's damaged, do I fix it and then have it get short again? And it was kind of the short Schrodinger's cat, where, you know, I didn't know the status and I was okay with that. But when I got there and I saw, okay, there's a hole, I ran to the windows and I thought, okay, like, these have to be smashed. But they were all intact somehow. And I thought, okay, I guess it could have been worse.
Were the windows boarded up or were they just still intact open? Oh, wow.
Yeah. They were fine. But the tenant, before they left, they had closed the blind, so I couldn't see the windows until I had to undo the blind. It was like this big moment where I was like undoing the blinds. And then I had these like roller blinds as well, like you have to pull it.
Yeah.
Like the built-in sunshades, which take forever, right? It was the longest 10 seconds of my life.
Are they the power ones?
No.
Well, you don't have power anyway, so.
Well, no, surprisingly, in Kharkiv, they in the center, there's not a problem with power because all the everybody left and there's nobody using electricity. So they have an electrical grid to support 2 million people. Now there's like 30,000 people left.
Sure. So there's there's no surge to it at all. So, okay. Yeah.
So they, like, the week I was there, it was down for maybe an hour.
Wow. Interesting. So did you get the hole patched up, first of all?
Well, first, I couldn't even contact anyone because I had no cell phone signal at all. And my internet provider, I didn't pay for them for 8 months. So that shut down. So I had to wait until the next day to get internet restored so that I can even call someone to come fix the hole.
It blows my mind that you can be in the middle of a country in a war and you're just calling to get your internet restored the same day. I can't even do that in America, Johnny.
Well, to be fair, the guy had to come over the next morning, but yeah.
Oh my God. You know how much money I'd have to bribe a cable guy to get them over to my place the same day?
And the funny thing was, I wanted the gigabit package because it was only like, I don't remember how much it was. It was maybe double the price, but I was like, yeah, it'd be great to have 1,000 megabytes.
So it was $4 a month instead of two.
No. But it's not expensive at all. Actually, what do you pay for your internet?
I pay $50 a month.
Okay. And how fast is it? Like, what are your actual speeds?
Well, let's do a test right now.
Okay.
This is like 9 a.m. Ooh, it's looking good. I don't know. You might have some competition on your hands here, Johnny.
Okay.
My download speed is almost done. My download speed is 522 megabytes per second.
Wow, very nice. And that's Wi-Fi, yeah?
This is Wi-Fi, yeah. So maybe direct, I'll probably get a little better. Not as great on the upload, but still pretty good. 40 megabits per second on the upload.
You know what? Your upload is terrible. That's not sequential at all. Like,
yeah, you'd think they'd be paired a little better. I'd rather have it be the opposite. I'd rather take the upload at 500 versus the download.
Yeah, here's the way I think of it is, you got to take the worst number and that's the number.
That's what your internet is.
Yeah, like, so there's some people saying, you know, I have $500, you know, $1,000 in the bank and, you know,
a $400,000 loan.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, you can't say that. Like, it doesn't make any sense, right? Like, what you actually have is the difference. So my place there, and the thing is, I realize that as long as you have like what would you say is the amount that you actually need? Like if it was sequential, the bare minimum for me, I would say is 10 and 10. If it was 10 and 10, I can use it, like, you know, I can do everything I need to do. It's not ideal, but
that'd be a great day on my home internet. And that's why we had so many issues with my home internet that I just couldn't use it anymore. So yeah, that's bare minimum.
Okay. So the guy came and basically he said, if you want to do fiber, I got to come back again 2 days from now and run the actual the fiber optic from the street to your house. And he's like, but today I can install just like basic, you know, internet. And I was like, all right, let's just start with that. I did the test and it was 50 up and 60 down.
I'd take that.
Yeah. And I was like, well, you know what? Like, that is plenty fast for an Airbnb that I'm never at.
Right.
And it was only $7 a month.
Oh, God.
So I said to the guy, I said, yeah, don't worry about it. Like, this is plenty fine.
It's times like these where I'm like, can we just step in and stop Russia? Because I'm going to move to Ukraine.
Yeah. I just checked my internet here in Kyiv. And granted, I'm actually sitting in like probably the furthest room away from the router. So first I can tell you how much I pay a month. I think it's around 300 grand or something. So like I think like
$8 or $9. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So my download, 266, 268. And my upload, it's over 200.
Ooh, see, that makes a huge difference. Ugh. All right.
Like I'm like downloading, like the difference between 2 minutes and 3 minutes download, you know, an HD movie or something, like it doesn't make any difference to me. But uploading, like, you know, to be able to upload something like a 40-minute video,
yeah,
or huge files.
I'm aware. Guys like you and me both do video stuff, and it's painstaking. I put it up, I start the upload, and I just leave. I go, I'll come back in a couple hours.
Yeah.
I just can't sit there and wait. You can't do it.
Well, I have this game now where when I upload a video, I like try to type the title of the video faster than it uploads.
I wish I had that problem.
Yeah.
Well, before we get out of here, Johnny, I was wondering, do you have any like actual numbers of total what you've invested in the property, what you actually made? Because you did get some time to rent it out and make a few dollars on it, and what you think you can do with it when this war is done.
Yeah, okay. So let's do the math. So $37,500 for the property. I paid my real estate agent. I think I gave her, ended up giving her 4%.
And that's on top of the 37, or that's 37 all rolled
in?
Yeah.
Okay. On top. I'm assuming you're doing the math because I'm not doing it.
Sure. I got my calculator open. Go okay. Keep talking.
And then the tax on it, actually, it's crazy. Annual property tax is insignificant. It's something like, I don't know, less than $100 a year.
We'll just call it 100.
Yeah, which is insane because in the U.S., I mean, it's thousands of dollars. Yeah.
Baseline in California is 1%, and then depending on what city you're in, they could tack on a little on top of that of the property's value. So you would have been paying 400, let's say, so a quarter of what we pay.
Which is still low compared to because the value of the property was low. But
right, yeah, man, like, it's depending on the value.
Imagine you buy a $700,000 house and you're paying 1%. A year. It's insane.
Yeah, that's $7,000 a year again.
Yeah. So my HOA, which is also something that is stupidly high in the U.S., where people are paying, what, $400 a month?
Oh, like, my God. Yeah, I wish. Keep going.
Well, I mean, like, you don't have a pool.
I'd say the cheapest, dumpiest apartments are $500 to $600 a month.
Oh, my God. Okay, so my HOA is $19 a month.
So let's say $250 a year. We'll round up a bit.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that was it. And it's like, maybe like, you know, maybe $1,000 total in like lawyer costs and everything, but probably not even that much, probably like $500 or something. It was a very easy transaction, very cheap.
So let me run those down really quick as I add them up. $37,500 purchase price plus $1,500 goes to the realtor plus $100 in property taxes plus $250 for your HOA. plus 1,000 for miscellaneous lawyer, etc. You're all in just over $40,000, $40,350.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then I can tell you how much I've actually made in those, what, 6 months or something that I actually had a...
Yeah, right around there, because I visited you in the summer of 2021 and the war broke out in February. So yeah, about seven, eight months.
Okay. I'm going to log into my Airbnb account. Let's take a look. So 2022 total nights booked was 98 nights. I think I only had it listed for 4 months.
So you were at a good, what's 4 months times 30? You were at like 75% occupancy.
Yeah. And then nightly price, the cheapest it had ever rented it for was $25. And the most was actually 85.
Wow. $85 a night for that.
Yeah. I think it was like some special event or something that weekend. I just knew it was going to be.
That makes sense. That's why I was looking at doing this in Vegas, because when they have those big events like F1s coming, you can triple the price and people will pay it.
Yeah. In those 4 months, my after fee payout was $7,860.
Okay. And then you said you paid your property manager 20%?
Yeah. And then I had to pay utility bills, which were about $100 a month, let's say.
So we're saying 4 months?
Yeah.
Okay. So you took in $7,860. You take off $1,572 to pay your property manager. Take off another $400 for utilities. And that leaves you with $5,888. So you're all in at $40,350. You got $5,888 back. You still owe $34,462, which is essentially sort of zero right now, Johnny. How does that make you feel?
It's hard because, I mean, technically it's still there, right? Like I was, you know, living in it last week. Hopefully this war will end soon and, you know, prices will recover. But who knows, right? It's right now I can say it was a terrible investment. I mean, it was a fantastic investment when it was working. I mean, what is the percentage of, you know, what was it $5,000 in 4 months? Like over, that's like $1,000 a month I was making. It's insane, you know, on a $40,000 investment.
You got 14% of your investment back in 4 months. So what's times seven? If you went another, within 3 years, you would have had all your money back. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, who knew that, you know, Russia was going to start a full scale war in 2022. So, you know, it's the same, like, it'd be exactly the same as if I had found this deal in Turkey. I would have bought it, you know, if the numbers made sense. And if this earthquake hit, I would have been fucked. But, you know, who knew, right? And the same thing in California. I mean, like, let's say you found a you know, cash flowing place in Malibu or something, and then there was an earthquake. Like, it's, and, you know, for some reason, there was no insurance on it. Like, it just, or you know, even closer, probably like a wildfire, right? Like, how many people have lost their homes in California because of fires?
Yeah, it happens every year. And the thing about that, though, is you do have a lot more of a safety net here in the United States. And there's a huge argument for that. Obviously, you've seen that, you know, the worst can happen, where if that happened here in the U.S., it wouldn't be as bad. You're still going to lose a lot of money, but you're not going to find those investment payoffs when they work like you did. I would never find a property with a margin like that anywhere in the United States, just because of our built-in safety net.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, the monthly fees are going to be so much higher in the U.S., the tax and everything. So, and the U.S. is kind of like, you know, a 5% annual profit, it would be great, right? But if you think about it, is it really worth earning 5% and just hoping that the property is going to grow in value, versus just putting that into, you know, the stock market or something, which will probably make 7%.
I think that's the whole basis of a lot of the things we talk about, where we get ourselves involved in these deals and we go, why did we do this? I could make just as much money putting in an index fund or any other of the 200 other investments we've talked about, where I can just go to sleep and not think about it.
Yeah. So here's the absolutely worst part of this investment. What actually made, so far, I would actually say it wasn't a bad investment. It got unlucky. But here's why it is bad to buy real estate: is you have to be there. Like, yeah. even if you hire a manager, something might happen to that manager. They might end up, you know, leaving, you know, they might end up screwing you over. Like something might happen where you, like, you don't think that you can be there. I think it's a pipe dream to have a out-of-state property or out-of-city property that you never have to actually visit because you end up being involved.
Yeah, the second I flew in to see you in Ukraine, Johnny, what happened? Something that would be very minor, you would think, but it turns into a major issue. When I landed, Johnny just got word that he found out that a tenant had actually broken the lock on his door, so the door couldn't even close.
Well, he broke the lock because he got home drunk and just smashed it. So yeah, like, you end up taking care of these issues whether you want to or not, because if you don't do it, no one will. And when I went back, not only did it have to do with this hole in the roof, the food that this guy left in the fridge.
Oh, yuck. I didn't even think about that.
It was a disaster. And it was a brand new fridge, so I couldn't just throw it out. In retrospect, I should have just closed the fridge and just paid someone and said, you know what?
That was the number one rule. When a long time ago, I was trying to buy a house too, back in like 2011. And we were looking at foreclosures. And I just remember the realtor going, number one rule when you look at these houses, don't ever open the fridge. He's like, one time I went to grab the fridge and he's like, don't do it.
Yeah, it's always, always, always a bad idea. If you guys are ever going to leave a house unattended for more than a month or two, take everything out of the fridge and unplug it.
Yeah.
and leave the doors open to breathe, because they are breeding ground for bacteria. It was disgusting. I spent the next 2 days washing this fridge. I threw up. It was that bad. And I will guarantee you, if this is a rental, if I didn't own the place, I would not have, there's zero chance I would have washed it. I would have been like, you know what? Fuck it. It's not my problem.
Oh yeah. No way.
Right.
Well, on that light note, I appreciate the insight on this, Johnny. I know we're all curious about the status of your investments, making sure, obviously, your number one priority is that you're staying safe, and preach it again. I think it's the theme of 2023 for this podcast, is to be diversified. This could have crushed you if you went all in on real estate and this happened, but you're in an okay state. You lost a good chunk of money, but you're okay because you're pretty heavily diversified.
Yeah. I still lost more in crypto. So, but crypto didn't kill me, almost kill me. I don't know how I left this out of the story, but one of the nights I was sleeping, the second to the last night, right when I laid down and I was exhausted from the day, I heard a missile that sounded like it exploded in my living room.
Oh, God. Yeah, I bet even if it's a block or two away, I'm sure it's so loud. I can't even imagine.
It shook and it sounded like it hit the room next door. And I opened my eyes, I turned on the light, and I looked around and I was like, should I go next door and check? And I was like, no, I'm like, there's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
It's like middle of the night. So I went to sleep, and actually I forgot about it. And the next day I was so busy. It was my last day. I had to pack all this guy's crap and then like ship it somewhere for him and then make my train. So it was like a long day. And it wasn't until 2 days later that I realized that missile flew over my head, hit like a kilometer away, so like half a mile away. And then a few days after that, my group chat blew up because something hit one block away from me. And when they showed the video, it was like this building was completely destroyed. The street was gone. It looked like something you see out of like a movie or something. It's like, I can't believe that was a block away. I could, like, if I was living there and it was just one block difference, I would have died.
That's super scary stuff. I don't even know how to respond to that. That's why I get why you want to be there, but at the same time, it's like, it's days like that, you got to consider maybe I should be leaving for a while.
Well, that's why I'm leaving for a while. So, like, I'm taking a little break. I'm taking a little vacation. But that was a big trigger of it. It's like, you know what? If I didn't have the property there, there's no way. Like, I would have went. So this is a warning to everybody. You're never going to have to go into a war zone and check on your Vanguard account.
Yeah, true. And speaking of going into a war zone, I've actually had a couple of Patreon members reach out and say that they want to go to Ukraine or they are going to Ukraine, you know. Just make sure you're being very cautious. I know Johnny's there to help you, give you some resources should you decide to do that. You know, we're not going to tell anybody what to do, but you know, just be smart about it. And if you need some advice, we can help out. The best place to do that is in Patreon. We also have a cool Discord group that we just started. You can check all that information out. InvestLikeABoss.com. Become a Patreon. A lot of well-seasoned travelers out there. And obviously, Johnny has a lot of insight into Ukraine. If you're looking at doing something like that, best place to go is Patreon.
Yeah. And actually, in the Patreon, we have an invite to Discord, which is a kind of a chat group just for Patreon members. And in there, there's actually a whole section for travel. And there's some legit travel bosses in that group. So it's absolutely worth it.
Yeah, it actually just paid off for me last night. I'll share some info on that in the Discord. So we'll tease that a little bit. Johnny, always interesting to hear from you and hope you are staying safe. I think you're back in Kyiv now and you do have some travel plans of your own coming up, which I'm sure we'll hear about coming soon on the podcast.
Yeah. So thanks, Derek. Thank you guys for listening and I'll see you guys in the next one. Ciao.
Thanks for listening to the Best Like a Boss podcast. Join our mailing list at investlikeaboss.com to get exclusive access to our insider investment portfolios and our private members forum.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends and leave us a review in the iTunes store. It helps more than you know. See you guys next week.